Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with Attorney Joseph Robel from the Chicago Bankruptcy Law Firm. This is the Chicago Bankruptcy Update, featuring information, news, and updates in bankruptcy law. Financial troubles are stressful, and bankruptcy can be a solution for you. If you are considering filing a bankruptcy, Joseph Robel will courteously and professionally review your finances, answer all your questions, and provide the information you need to allow yourself to decide if bankruptcy makes sense, has value, and is the best way to provide relief from your financial woes. For a library of information about bankruptcy and the Chicago bankruptcy firm of Joseph Robel Limited, please visit chicagobankruptcy.com. This is the July 2017 Chicago Bankruptcy Update question and answer podcast. A few of the topics that we're going to talk about on today's interview are, number one, can you and when should you include a title loan in your bankruptcy filing? Another topic is, if you owe money to a business that files for bankruptcy, are you still on the hook to pay them? Another question that someone offered to us was, when you need to file for bankruptcy and get a new car, what's the best plan? Get the car before the bankruptcy, get it after, and why? Of course, we also want to drill down to the answer to why or what does someone need to do in order to prepare for a bankruptcy case and get everything ready for the lawyer. And also, we're going to answer the question that someone posed to us about whether Social Security and pension payments are safe from creditors when you file for bankruptcy. All good questions from real people, and we're going to give some real answers. I'm here with Joseph Robel, and he's been a practicing attorney since 1973 and has experience in a wide variety of legal matters relating to individuals and families. He presently concentrates his practice in consumer bankruptcy, where Mr. Robel helps clients get out of debt and get that fresh financial start. He's an active member in several bar associations, and he's on the bankruptcy panel of the pro bono program of the Chicago Volunteer Legal Services. Mr. Robel earned a BA in psychology from Northwestern University, and in 1973, he earned a JD from DePaul University School of Law. He also served in the U.S. Army Reserve, 363rd Civil Affairs Unit. All right, moving forward, this disclaimer, this is a general information program. Advice shared on this show does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. If you have specific questions, call 312-781-0996. Again, that number, 312-781-0996 for Joseph Robel Limited. And it's time to say good afternoon to Mr. Joseph Robel.
Good afternoon, Nick. How are you today?
I am doing well. It is Friday, and I am ready to tackle exciting world of bankruptcy. And once again, we've got a good line of questions here, some real stuff from real people.
Well, I tackle the exciting world of bankruptcy every day, weekends also, evenings. So ready to go, ready for the first question that you may have.
All right. Well, I can tell that you spend so much time in this. It's not only your business, but your hobby and your passion. So you're the right guy for the job to answer these questions. All right. Here's our first one. Someone says, I want to go file bankruptcy, and I want to include a title loan. What's some advice for the people with the title loan?
Well, let's talk about a title loan. I'm sure a lot of people don't even know what that is. Basically, you need some money, and it's hard to get loans nowadays. You've got a car that's paid for, and a local lender will lend you some money, usually at a very high interest rate, but they want some collateral in case you don't pay. Besides suing you if you don't pay them, they want to be able to take something from you, and that would be your vehicle. So to do that, in exchange for getting the loan, you sign over the title to your car. The lender puts a lien on the title. You still own the car. The car is yours, but it's subject to a lien by the loan company, and that's a title loan. Now, you have to repay this title loan just as if it were a loan to buy a vehicle. And when you file a bankruptcy, let's say you're going to do Chapter 7 to wipe out your debts, you have to make a choice of continuing to pay the title loan and keep the vehicle, or you can allow the vehicle to be repossessed and owe no money due to the Chapter 7. Sometimes people do file bankruptcies and determine that it's not worth it to them to pay the loan on their vehicle, whether it's a regular vehicle loan or a title loan, and they get rid of the debt in that manner, but they do lose the car. With the other bankruptcy, Chapter 13, which is a payment plan procedure, there will be the option of continuing to pay the title loan directly, or pay it through the plan, meaning when you make a monthly payment to your local Chapter 13 trustee, the trustee will pay your title loan for you. Which way is more beneficial in the Chapter 13? There's a lot of variables to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. These are really expensive too, these title loans. The interest is significant, and when people fall in this trap sometimes of it's like payday loans. I don't know, some states have done away with payday loans, but people are falling short, and your paycheck comes and you got to pay this thing off. I mean, if you're already having difficulty making ends meet, advancing that money at that high interest rate and cutting that out of your ability to pay, it's almost impossible to get ahead, and it's easy to see how people can get so far behind. And again, the interest on these things can just be phenomenal.
Well, a lot of clients that meet with me, I basically call their situation desperate, and everyone always wants to avoid bankruptcy, and sometimes by delaying looking into bankruptcy, they make their situation worse, make their situation more desperate, incur more debt. But I totally understand what people are trying to do to try to avoid, and sometimes it does work for people to take out these high-interest loans. Sometimes that particular loan can help them. But I do see so many situations where it's a little bit sad as to what has happened.
It is. And, it's also the fear freezes people. They're frozen in fear. And the anticipation of things is often worse than the actual thing itself. And that's true in so many situations in life. And, not only buying a house, you think buying a house is going to be terrible. It's going to be so much, the anticipation of that. So difficult, and actually, it's rather easy. People will be surprised how easily they can be approved for credit. People will be surprised how easily it is to fix the credit. And also with bankruptcy, the anticipation of it and their own self, their own values people are putting on it themselves are often way worse than the reality of it. It's pretty simple. And at the end of it, the phone's not ringing anymore with all these, people. You get to start over. It's a good thing. Let's go on to our next question about reaffirmations, kind of following up to what we were talking about with the title loan. So the next person signed a reaffirmation agreement, and they want to know, would the loan show up as discharged? Specifically, the person says, I thought that I filed a reaffirmation agreement when I filed bankruptcy in December of 2015, but the loan shows up as discharged. I was told that they never received the paperwork. I've been paying monthly until the last 3 months, and the car was repossessed, and want to know, am I going to be held responsible for the balance of the balance after the sale?
Well, that sounds like the
agreement never got there.
Yep. Yeah. It sounds like someone who did their own bankruptcy without a lawyer. Again, it's an example of the pitfalls of trying to be your own attorney, being penny wise and pound foolish. not using a lawyer for bankruptcy. I've seen so many make your hair stand on end. In any event, in this situation, whatever this person did with a reaffirmation, did they get one from the lender? It comes from the lender. It's sent to the debtor if requested. If this person put their own agreement and sent it in, then they did the wrong thing. There was no reaffirmation agreement filed with the bankruptcy because the court docket would have shown that as having been done. So what happens is when there's a vehicle loan and the vehicle is not reaffirmed, the lender does have the right to repossess that vehicle without the reaffirmation, because that reaffirmation gives them additional collateral that they wouldn't have because of the bankruptcy. With the repossessed vehicle, this particular debtor is not going to get the car back. They won't be held responsible for the balance, but they've lost the car. So an example of an extreme example of a danger of filing without an attorney. They wanted to keep their car as a result of the bankruptcy. Now they've lost it, and they'll probably never get this back. They won't have to worry about the deficiency, but the car is gone.
Very interesting. Well, I hope that they get a new car and have a great time with their fresh start. And, cars come and go. It's what's important is not what you do before all this stuff. It's what you do afterwards. So our next question this was a good one. The person owes money to a business. The business goes ahead and they file for bankruptcy. That business still going to come and collect? Says I owe money to USA Discounters, LLC. It's a business that recently filed for bankruptcy, and I owe them money. Are they still entitled to collect the money I owe them?
And the answer is yes, they are. The debt does not disappear because the business that owns this particular debt files bankruptcy. The bankruptcy trustee that will be assigned to the case has the right to collect on this debt. If this business is bought by another individual or another company, and that company now owns the debt, and they can collect. So the fact that the debt is owned by a bankrupt business does not by itself relieve this particular person of owing the money. I've seen in such a situation that nothing ever happens. The debt itself gets lost in the shuffle, and the client never has to worry, but that you cannot count that happening at all.
Right. You know, the same way people will say, well, I owed money to XYZ utility provider. It never got paid. It went to collections. They sell the debt. I mean, those things are sold in bundles. And, you know, all of a sudden you get your phone starts ringing years later from something that you completely forgot about. And people will say, nope, I don't owe it. I don't have a deal with these other people. But, you know, those debts are there. They exist. Someone has a legal right to, you know, say you owe me money. And it gets sold downstream. And that's how it rolls. Here's another good question about the vehicle purchase one. This guy says, I'm planning to file bankruptcy, but I'm going to need a new car. Should I buy it before I file? That's an interesting question. Sometimes things happen in the same time. Car breaks down, the transmission goes out on you, literally on your way to Joseph Robo Limited's office in one of the suburban locations. Hey, what did I do? File first or buy a car?
And that has happened, absolutely.
There you go.
Okay, so as with so many of these questions, the initial answer is that depends whether to do it before or after. If this particular individual is being represented by a lawyer, then I would ask the attorney for the attorney's opinion. The attorney will guide the client with regard to your make, model, cost of vehicle. Generally, prior to a Chapter 7 or Chapter 13, prior to the filing, getting a new vehicle to replace a prior vehicle that needed to be replaced, not just because, hey, I like fancy new cars, and everybody loves a new car. It's just something exciting about that. But if the vehicle needed to replace, it's generally not going to be a problem. Unless the amount of the payment is going to have a negative impact on either the Chapter 13 plan or on their budget in the Chapter 7. Getting the car loan prior to filing is always going to result in a lower interest rate. So that would be more beneficial to get the car before filing. But if the particular person is going to file the bankruptcy on their own, they're doing this without guidance, and I would suggest to them that they should wait and get the car until after the bankruptcy is filed.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's one of the things that we think about purchases made shortly before a bankruptcy is that sort of like fraud element of, you know, the idea people think, I'm going to go max out my credit cards and buy all the, you know, things I want here before I go and turn it all in and say, all right, wipe it away in the Chapter 7. And you don't get away with that. I think of like your grandmother. If you would tell your grandmother knows if you're up to no good and you're not doing something shady, you know. So if your grandma wouldn't like it, the bankruptcy trustee probably won't like it either. So it's kind of like social media. Don't put anything out there you wouldn't want your grandma to see. So I guess depending on your grandmother, you know, I guess it's all relative. But we have another question here about license to drive issues here. We have a guy who says, or gal, I don't know which, but they want to know if they have to wait until after their debts are discharged in the bankruptcy in order to have their driver's license reinstated. Specifically, it says, I recently filed for bankruptcy because I was in a car accident without insurance. My license is now suspended. Do I have to wait until my debts are all discharged and cleared in order to get my driver's license back?
The answer is no, they do not. The license will be reinstated after filing. They should or should have already submitted the notice of the filing of the bankruptcy that's issued by the clerk of the court a few days after the filing to the Motor Vehicle Department or Secretary of State, whatever the department's called in their particular state. There is a fee for reinstatement. Some states have a certain insurance that you must obtain to get a license back after suspension. But following the procedures of their particular state will allow them to have that license reinstated within a short period of time, a couple weeks after the bankruptcy is filed. They don't have to wait for the bankruptcy to be finished, which is 4 months in a Chapter 7 or at least 3 years in a Chapter 13. They can get that license back right away as long as there's nothing else that's causing the suspension. In this case, the suspension was not insurance and being in a vehicle accident, but I've had many clients who had a suspension and there's other problems on their license, a ticket not paid, didn't show up in court, some other violation, moving violation, that also needs to be cleared, that a bankruptcy itself won't clear, for example.
You know, there are so many. We see this, you know, some of these questions that pop up from time to time may seem like they're, you know, easy yes or no answers, and it's just not the case. You know, it's all the wrinkles and the details, you know, lead us to answers of, you know, so long as, wherefore, and here and after. And you know, your head can swim on some of these things when you know it's easy to more easy to understand. You know, credit card discharge, credit card debt, boom. But you know, driver's license issues and suspensions. There's a lot going on with bankruptcy. All the laws that intersect. It can be rather complicated in the procedures and the documentation required to get things cleared up. Can be particularly overwhelming, especially if you're not a bankruptcy lawyer yourself. Joseph Robel has over 40 years experience in representing clients in consumer bankruptcy with all the little wrinkles and so long as wherefores and here and afters that may come along with that. And that experience really helps make sure that your financial situation is going to be properly analyzed. So Joseph Robel and his staff understand you're probably anxious about these financial problems. You're tired of harassment by creditors. You're uncertain as to whether bankruptcy is what you really need. If bankruptcy will help your financial situation, that's what they're going to tell you. And they're going to tell you what Chapter 7 or 13 you may qualify for. At Joseph Robel Limited, the entire process, from the beginning all the way to the end, is going to be clearly explained to you, and you're going to give documents. Well, you'll get a what to do next letter and all, that tells you all the documents that you need to bring, pull together, and provide so that they can help you. That consultation, again, will take you from the entire process from start to finish so you know exactly what's going to happen. And if you don't need to file for bankruptcy, they're going to tell you that. Joseph Robel Limited is not going to put you in a bankruptcy simply to earn a fee. They are a small law firm of attorneys and staff experienced in consumer bankruptcy, and it is not one of these big bankruptcy law factories where you're going to get lost in the office. At Joseph Robel Limited, they're going to treat you like a human being with dignity, courtesy, and respect you deserve. The mission, the whole mission of this bankruptcy firm is to have you take control over your finances through the proper use of bankruptcy laws. Joseph Robel Limited has office located all over the Chicago area, the Chicago Loop, Chicago Rosemont, and in the suburbs, in Burr Ridge, in Deerfield, Gurnee, Naperville, Orland Park, Schaumburg, Skokie, St. Charles, and Westchester. So, Illinois clients in Cook and all the collar counties, Will, DuPage, Kane, LaSalle, Kendall, and Lake, come on down. All right, our next, back to our segment and our questions for today. We move on to a pension and Social Security question. This is one of those, you know, Social Security and pensions for many folks in their retirement years are on a budget, a fixed budget, and anything happening to that flow of revenue and income coming from a Social Security and the pension can literally put someone on the streets. So we're very concerned about these things. And the person with the question says, I'm a retired 73-year-old single woman, and due to unforeseen medical expenses and rising cost of living, I find myself in onerous credit card debt. Says, I've exhausted my assets, and I need to consider filing for bankruptcy, maybe a Chapter 7. My only sources of income are Social Security and a state pension from Wisconsin. Most of the debt is unsecured debt and credit card debt. I also have about $13,000 balance with U.S. Bank on my 2013 Chevrolet. How is this debt treated in Chapter 7?
Well, there's a whole series of questions that are very similar for many, many clients when they come in wondering about bankruptcy, wondering how it will work for them, what's going to happen. And one series of questions has to do with assets. I own a house. Can I file bankruptcy and keep it? I own a car. Can I file bankruptcy and keep it? I've got a pension. I've got a lot of money sitting with a financial institution. What happens to that pension? All right, so the good answer is that Social Security and pensions are safe, meaning if you file Chapter 7, they are not assets that can be or will be taken by the Chapter 7 trustee. Secondly, and there's a few different questions that are raised by this particular individual. Secondly, the vehicle. She's got a a Chevy with a balance on it, and how is that treated in Chapter 7? We've mentioned this earlier today. You have a vehicle. You owe money on it. You're filing Chapter 7. You're wiping out credit cards. You're wiping out medical bills. What happens to the car loan? You want to keep the car? Continue paying. Sign a reaffirmation agreement. If the car is too expensive, if the car is not worth what you owe, if you can't afford it, then give it back and owe no money. The third issue that I see here, and it's not something that this particular client even raises, but I will bring this up with either people who are elderly and aren't employed or younger people who aren't going to be working. Do they even need a bankruptcy? When you're not employed and your income is coming from Social Security and from pension, you're basically what's called judgment-proof. If you never, ever paid a creditor a penny again for the rest of your life and you were sued and the creditor received a court judgment against you, they have no way of collecting. Garnishments cannot be taken from Social Security or pension. And then the issue is, if you don't own real estate, a judgment cannot be a lien against anything. So there are many people like this particular questionnaire who is 73 and has Social Security and pension as an income. She may not even need to file because the creditors can't collect from her. However, what I have found from many, many of my clients, after I explain this to them, and advise them that they can save the attorney's fees and the costs, they have decided that they'd rather go ahead, do the bankruptcy anyway, because of the peace of mind that the bankruptcy brings them. There's no more phone calls, no more threatening letters. They don't have to worry about attending court. So that basically is something... That's a value that bankruptcy has to people that they don't even think about because of the situation here where there's no wage garnishment issue. So the three questions, Social Security and pension are safe. The car, keep it and pay it, give it back, owe no money. And the question of whether this person actually needs to file. And, of course, I can't answer that without going through a complete consultation with them.
Right. So you mentioned the Social Security and the pension being safe under Chapter 7. That's true, though, for 13 as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The thing is, it's usually Chapter 7 where the issue becomes of having something taken, because in the 13, when you're paying back creditors, your plan's going to be set up to cover any, or should be set up to cover any asset that you would have lost in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. So, yeah, that question almost always arises for a 7.
All right. So, Social Security and pensions are safe. Worry more about the people in Washington than the bankruptcy trustee. Okay, bankruptcy jurisdiction and venue. Oh, this is a good one. We don't often get jurisdictional and venue questions. Person says that they live in state A, where they moved about 80 days ago. This is going to be when taking the bar exam, circle 80 days ago. Okay. I have a small business in state B, where I recently moved from. I wish to file personal bankruptcy chapter 7 in state B, where I used to live. Says now I'm being told not to worry about the 90-day rule as to where I used to live, because my business and a house I am not keeping are located in state B. So what is going on here with this 90-day rule, state A, state B? Where do they file? What do they do?
Yeah, that's really funny. It's like a law school question.
It is. 80 days ago. That's going to be important. Circle that.
So one of the things that clients normally don't think about is like where they file. You know, normally, okay, I live in Chicago, Illinois. The filing is going to be in Cook County, which is it's not even a passing thought to people. But there can be an issue where should a particular person actually, or where are they supposed to file the bankruptcy? So you were supposed to file where you have lived the longest for the last 180 days. So if you lived in Chicago and 60 days ago you moved to Kansas City, if you wanted to file in Kansas City because the lawyer's fees are cheaper or the exemptions for what you can own are better than in Illinois and exemptions vary from state to state, you would need to live in Kansas City at least 90 days. Then you would be living there the longest period over the last 180, and then you could file in Kansas City. But there's the other issue as to where you can file. You can also file where you own real estate and where you have a business. So this particular person moved to a different state but has a business in the prior state, and they are allowed to file in the state where they lived. Why they're choosing to do that is, you know, I can only speculate. I will tell you that I recently filed a bankruptcy for a client who lives in Monaco in Europe.
Wow.
Very, very unusual. Yeah, very, very unusual situation. His business takes him to the States, at least a dozen times a year. So he's always here, and he was able to make arrangements for meeting with me on a few occasions and meeting with the trustee. But what allowed him to file in Cook County is that he had a condominium that he owns at the time of the filing in Cook County where a tenant was living. That gave him the jurisdiction and venue in this area. So you're right, a little bit different question than we often get.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about someone from Monaco having international travel and condos in Chicago, and they're, you know, I'm picturing their castle in Monaco along a nice river, and they're talking about bankruptcy. And, you know, people, it's so, the knee-jerk action is that, well, in order to file bankruptcy, you need to be, you know, living out in the gutter, you know, barely hanging on. How can someone who's traveling and flying back and forth possibly have a bankruptcy? And a lot of people scratch their heads on it. And, you know, but that for that man, and I don't know his situation, but it could have very well been a financial planning tool that helped him situate things for bigger and better things. I don't know. I mean, but it's not, I think that people have to get over that idea that bankruptcy is only for people who are like knocking on the door of being on the streets.
No, you're absolutely right. I have in the last 5-6 years filed many more bankruptcies. Some of them, of course, Chapter 13, for clients with higher incomes than you would expect. And, the problems of the financial problems that people have can happen to anyone. It's like a cold. Anyone can catch a cold.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can have financial problems.
Right. I mean, you can have, anyone can have, a significant business and decent business income, but then all of a sudden something in your business goes crazy. I mean, anything can happen. You know, the more, like they say, more money, more problems. You know, it's very true. All right, we have a couple questions left to wrap up here. Someone wants to know the basics. What do I need to file bankruptcy? It says, my husband and I are in lots of credit card debt, and we got our first judgment in the mail today. What do they do?
Okay, number one, find yourself an experienced local bankruptcy attorney. By local, someone who's familiar with the trustees in the county in which you live and the procedures in your county, because they vary from county to county and state to state. Check the internet. Go to AVVO, AVVO.com. Go to the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys. Talk to family or friends who you know file bankruptcy. Who was their lawyer? Did they like their lawyer? Interview two or three attorneys. The same thing as if you had a serious medical problem, you're going to pick the correct doctor. For your meeting, your initial consultation, there are probably some forms that the lawyer will want you to fill out, and you also need to bring with you your most recent federal income tax return, 6 months' worth of pay stubs or other evidence of income for yourself, and if you're married, for your spouse, if your spouse is working, and if you live together, even if your spouse is not going to join you because the family income is a major factor in the analysis, and the obvious, copies of your bills, letters from collection agencies, mortgage statements, credit card statements, title loans, etc. That'll be your basics that the attorney will want from you. And then once you get into the preparation of the petition, there's more paperwork. Like anything else for the government, lots of paperwork in a bankruptcy. Be prepared.
All right. Well, that brings us to our last question for this episode. And that final question is, can I file bankruptcy again if I filed in 2010?
And yes, unfortunately, there are people who need to do a second time. We know that things happen in life, and we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So, Chapter 7, 8 years from the date of filing. This person filed in 2010. They're going to need to wait to 2018, and it's got to be a full 8 years. Now, what if they can't wait? They're being threatened with a wage garnishment. If they can't deal with the threatening creditors on their own, and if they're employed, then they could file a Chapter 13, set up a payment plan. Perhaps they could pay as little as 5 or 10 cents on the dollar, depending on their finances. So all is not lost if they need to file, and a Chapter 7 is not doable presently because of the waiting period not having elapsed.
All right. There you go. All right. Well, Joe, I appreciate your time in answering these folks' questions today. How can people follow up with you and ask their own questions?
They have a, like with so many things we have in life nowadays, there's so many choices, right? Okay, you can call 312-781-0996. We have a reception service Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, evenings or weekends. That phone call will go right to my cell phone, and you may get me directly. Check my website, chicagobankruptcy.com. Easy one to remember. A lot of information. You can prepare yourself on what a bankruptcy can and cannot do for you. I heartily recommend doing so, checking the website and seeing what's there. And contact me directly by email, Joseph Roble, W-R-O-B-E-L, all one word, at chicagobankruptcy.com.
All right. Good stuff. All right, Joe. Well, enjoy the rest of your July, and we will be back next month with a new set of questions, answers, and experiences in the fantastic world of bankruptcy. As always, it's a pleasure. I wish you the best, and also the best to all of our people out there who are listening to these podcasts and sharing them with people. It's always nice to click that share button and put it out there on the Facebook, LinkedIn or Twitter, just to tell people, here's some information if you're looking for it. Not everyone asks their friends for bankruptcy information. People try to maintain things a little more close to the cuff, but it's good to put it out there and share that so people find the information they need. Because again, just like what you would or wouldn't tell grandma, grandma also may have information on you, that bankruptcy that she heard from cousin Joey and Joey Jr. that might not be actually correct, or was correct for them, is not correct for you. So get the facts, get the information, and share the resources, share the wealth. All right, onward and upward. We hope everyone has a great weekend. Joe, it's always been a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
And Nick, thank you very much. And all of you listening out there, thank you for listening.
All right. Everyone have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.